overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Creation, touching the suffering on the planet, embracing the sacred moment with the ultimate stillness that exists once the sound of the bell ceases. And we take refuge in that stillness, in that abiding peace. We notice that this peace is always there, even though sometimes we get distracted by the comings and goings around us. But for this sacred time together, we take refuge in the stillness, in the peace, in the emptiness. And the Buddhist idea of emptiness is all about empty of self. When there is no local self narrating its story of being in control or out of control, when the local self is not struggling with its history or herstory, with its plans and its dreams of some future illusion that we seek to have made manifest in the world, when all of that ceases, there is still this presence, this life, and we are that. And so the invitation is to go from my story and elevate it into our story and ultimately arrive at the story of life itself. And we are that life. Ram Dass, in his lovely book, Be Here Now, spoke about placing our attention on our eternal soul, not on our egoic desires, not on our beliefs and concerns and judgments, but rather on that which existed before we were born, that presence that we all are coming into relationship with by coming here. And then when this physical body should leave this mortal coil, we're still there, but we've gone into another realm, the realm of spirit. We've returned to light, the one light that gave us all life. And then we are enlightened. We are filled with that light. The Buddha said, be a light unto the world. Jesus said, let your light shine. They recognized that we are an energy that moves through form. And we come to this experience on Sunday mornings to have a direct experience with that. That original wisdom that pre-existed this incarnation. That original breath that was here before we breathed the breath. And so in its profound simplicity, The story is the story of creation, is the story of existence, is the story of the one that knows no other. Ram Dass said that when we make our transition, we will be asked two questions. How much did you give and receive love while you were here in this incarnation? And secondly, how much service did you render to this planet, to one another? And without thinking too much about that, rest in the question and allow the question to flower within the depths of your heart space, so that the flowers of compassion can beautifully grow within the heart of the one that we all share. This month of September, we're going to explore our dream of life. And as I contemplate our dream of life, I realize, is it life's dream or is it my dream? And when I move out of my dream and then taste our dream, ultimately there is just the dream. The dream that the universe is having of itself through each one of us. Could we invite that revelation, that recognition of something so much vaster than what we have heretofore labeled as the dream, that we would choose? There is a letting go and a letting God. There is a dying daily to be born again in that. There is a losing yourself to a finding yourself. And so as my dear friend said to me this Sunday morning, it's a both and. We're both existence itself and we are non-existence. We are both form and we are emptiness. We are spaciousness and yet we have a finite self. And when we embrace the all of us, we then can navigate in a playful way on this journey to nowhere, on this journey to now here. When you're ready to play in the playground of the unmanifest, I invite you to open your eyes, to smile behind your mask, knowing that this infinite presence lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of our being. And it's funny, I was listening to Thich Nhat Hanh this morning in my meditations, and he said, the result of going into the deep is that a smile places itself on your lips, and that's the smile of the universe. And if you forget your smile, just remember the smile of Bertram Jodi, and it'll take you home to this place that we all share. It's so funny, I have photographs of my animals around the house, and I keep this one of Bertram on the armoire because he literally is smiling at me. And I look up at him and I just take that smile into my heart, because where would he go? Yes, he's not here in form, but his spirit is there, always reminding me that he came here to teach me peace. He came here to teach me compassion. The one I'm concerned about a little bit is the pug, because the pug would sit down in front of Bertram, and Bert says, well, it's my job to take care of him and clean him, because you know pugs are notoriously, they don't take care of themselves. So first he'd clean the little creases in his face, then he'd lick his ears, then he'd lick under the armpits, because pugs actually have BO. And now the pug sits in front of me and I don't know exactly what to do. I can't sit there and lick him. So I'll take a little washcloth and I'll do his armpits and rub his little face. And they're here to remind us that we're in this together. At least that's the way I see it. I love to play with themes, and I have this wonderful book that I ordered, and I was going to teach it, but I'm using it more as a muse. It's called The Book of the Soul, and it's 52 Paths of Living from the Soul. And Mark Nepo speaks to my soul because he makes everything so intimate, and he usually courts a deeper question. You know, how can I be intimate with the dream of the life that I have and that you have? Now, the dream is an interesting concept. Dream. Dream, dream, dream. So, and this life is but a dream. Remember when you were a little kid and they'd say, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream? Mm-hmm. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Now you notice that there are four merrilies to every three rows. So you're supposed to have fun when you row your boat down the stream, not somebody else's boat. And make sure you go down the stream and not up the stream. And remember throughout all of this that it's just a dream. It's the dream that we've created. Don Miguel Ruiz, in his book, The Four Agreements, talks about the metotes, the Toltec path of enlightenment. And he says, we all live in the metote. The metote is the dream, what the mind has created. Science of mind is all about the dream. Give a mental equivalent to the universe. Now, what if you've given the universe the wrong mental equivalent? Then you're stuck in your mental equivalent. So could we be willing to let go of the dream that we thought we wanted and embrace the life that we've been given? Mark Nepo tells a lovely story of a young girl. Her dream was to be with the goldfinches. In the spring, when the goldfinches would migrate up north, she would see them at her bird feeder, and they're all gold and beautiful, and they were singing their songs, and she just loved the goldfinches when they come, but then the goldfinches would leave, and she would be bereft because her dream was attached to having the goldfinches in her life. But then, the next spring, the goldfinches came back, and, oh, my dream is here. But then, Mark Nepo says, the dream isn't about having the goldfinches in your life. The goldfinches come, they land on your hand, they sing their song, they give their gift of music, and then they leave. But the dream existed before the goldfinches came, and the dream exists after the goldfinches go. So could we know the impermanence of this stuff that we've identified with? So then Mark Nepo hands it back to the soul. He says, what if the dream that we have out here is merely a reflection of our soul's yearning? And sometimes we confuse that dream for a goldfinch, or a big house, or the right and perfect mate, or a career, and you label the career. And when all of that falls away, well, then what happened to your dream? So as I'm playing with this, our dream of life, I'm asking myself, can I get a bigger dream? Can I really enter into the inquiry, into the question? Now, Raul and I have a teacher, and his name is Richard Rohr. And Richard Rohr wrote a wonderful book called The Design of Patterns, or The Universal Patterns of the Universe. And it's still working on me. I put it in that opening meditation. He starts off with a graph of, here's the story. It's the story of life. Then there's our story, the story of the Western world, science of mind, our story. Then there's my story, the tiniest story. And he says, could we let go of my story, which has all the trauma, all the preferences, all the what I want, what I don't want. Could we let go of me and discover something that's a little bit bigger? The collective consciousness of compassion, perhaps, that we're all one here on the planet and we're here to help one another. Ralph Waldo Emerson says three simple things. He says, be silly. And for that, what I hear is be playful, be like a child, be creative, be spontaneous. Then he says, be honest, speak the truth. Little girl, even if it ticks off the world, be honest. Above all, to thine own self be true, and if it pokes the people, poke them. And then he says, be kind. Could we awaken the flowers of compassion in our heart? My beloved husband and I were walking our pug in the stroller down the street, and he noticed that there was a butterfly that was stuck on the road in some kind of sticky substance, and he couldn't get his legs set free. So he passed off the buggy to me. He got down there on the ground, and he coerced the little legs out of the sticky stuff, and before you know it, the butterfly lifted off and flew away. Now, could we experience the kindness even with a simple thing like a butterfly on the path of life? So that's the invitation. So Mark Nepo, in this book of patterns, he says, and this is really wonderful to take into inquiry. He says there's this pattern that is throughout nature. It's thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. So, okay, here's the thesis. You are. You exist. You're a separate individual here on the planet. Then the antithesis. You don't exist. All that exists is that. You're just a blink in the eye of the universe. You're just a dream the universe is having. Antithesis. Then synthesis. You're both and. Yes, you exist, but you don't exist. Yes, you're a human, but you're also a spirit. The synthesis. So could we look at our own theses? That's T-H-E-S-I-S. Could we look at our own theses, the things that we hold sacrosanct? Like, for instance, one of the theses of Christianity was that you're born in sin and you need the blood of Jesus. Well, the antithesis is you aren't born in sin. You're born perfect, whole, and complete. And you don't need anybody's blood to know the true nature. You just need to embody the Christ consciousness, which what he also exampled to the world. Well, there's thesis, antithesis. And then the synthesis would be, could I go back to the Garden of Eden and experience the oneness of the Adam and Eve consciousness? And you know, Eden, that very first allegorical story of the Bible, Gan Eden, means a consciousness of oneness. So could we go back to our original wisdom, what we knew back then, and not what we know now? We become so cynical, so westernized, so materialistic, so egoic, so opinionated. Could we go back to that original wisdom? Gigi stopped by with some seeds from her garden, and my garden was blessing me with a late fall gardenia. I love it how it does that. It gives me one gardenia in the fall, normally blooms in June. Then my John F. Kennedy rose gave me one blossom. It sits by Bertram's picture in the house. And you know, I love it when it gives me simple little things. And I said to Gigi, I said, I've been reading this book on the patio, and Raul would like it because he reminds me, and it's called Original Wisdom. And it's a story of the indigenous people here on the planet. And there still are some, even though they're very remote. The indigenous peoples, before we had religion, before we had this westernized developed world, the original people lived in harmony with nature. They recognized that it was all the Great Spirit. So the rocks were sacred, the trees were sacred, the water was sacred. They called them our brothers and sisters. Could we go back to that original wisdom and know ourselves as that? Wow, can you imagine what life would be like if we saw everything as sacred, if we saw everything as an aspect of our own self? That's the story versus my story. We're not here. And here's another thesis that went awry. The thesis was that man is here to have dominion over nature. Man versus nature. That was original Christian doctrine. Then we recognize that nature is God in expression. So what would be the synthesis then? We're not here to dominate it, but we're here to listen to it and learn from it. It's our great teacher. That's my friend Jean Ann is being taught by the butterflies every day on this planet. You know, and the little worms speak to her. I don't know, do you all have this very strange, exotic spider that comes to your garden in the fall? Gigi knows what I'm talking about. It's a yellow spider, and he looks, and he's huge, and he always finds the most inappropriate place to make his nest, and then he creates this ziggy-zaggy thing, and he sits right in the middle of that, and we've got one right in the corner of the garden, and every day I go over, and I have communion with this spider. And I say, Trey, whatever you do, don't walk through its nest, because she just sits there and she waits. I don't know whether she's waiting for a male spider to kill and have her babies, but whatever it is, she's awfully pretty and she sits there. So could we have a relationship with something as ephemeral as that and not get conceptual about it, not have a conclusion about it, but just allow it to coexist? So here you go. Thesis, I exist. Antithesis, I don't exist. Synthesis, I coexist. You can play with this thing ad nauseum. You know, there's a birth, and there is a death, and there is a resurrection. So every moment we're giving birth to this new sense of life. But you know what I've learned, and my friend Bill is exploring this concept of death? What if every death, a death to an idea, is a birth to an aha? So death and birth coexist over here in the synthesis. There is no death. And so when my beloved Terry boy is reflecting on his mother who made her transition a year ago, Helen, our mothers, made their transition 20 years ago, and I feel she's closer to me in death than she was in life. Now, does that mean I'm crazy? Jody and I will sit there and talk about her mother, Jane, and she said, oh, Jane's still here. And you know what my mother was so good at? She was raised on a consciousness of guilt. She would pass the platter of guilt, and if there was a problem, I was there to fix it. And so when I get a phone call from someone and I feel like the platter of guilt's being presented to me, I call up Jody and I say, Jody, what do I do with the platter of guilt? She says, you put it down and you say, no, thank you. But see, mom will keep haunting you in that sweet sort of playful way if you are permeable to the aha moments, because the universe never stops speaking. And the way it speaks is through experience. And so even the Buddha said, we don't learn from the experience, but we learn from our capacity to have the experience. So when Hal and our beautiful generational healing had a healing around his mom, I had the same healing around my mom, because my capacity to coexist with this beautiful man in a similar scenario from a mother who's been dead 20 years and yet who still exists in the patterns that she inculcated within her son, And in a beautiful, simple practice, in less than an hour, both Hal and I got to give her back her stuff. This is yours, it's not mine. And you know how to deal with it. And there was just this kind of moment of liberation. Terry Girls knows what I'm talking about. Now, did that really happen? Yes and no. In thesis, it didn't. Antithesis, it probably didn't. But in synthesis, yes, it did. So when we play in this field of the unmanifest, we think we're dealing in abstract stuff, but we're really dealing in very, very profound realms of consciousness. Sylvia will appreciate this, a brand new religious science student. They say you don't treat for things. You never treat for the object of the dream. You treat for the consciousness of. And when the consciousness is attained or embodied, like Ernest Holmes says, you can have as much good as you can take in the universe. He says, but you can only take what you can embody. Huh. So what can we embody? It was Nisargadatta that said, when I know that I'm nobody, he says, that's when wisdom begins to flower. And then when I know that I'm everybody, that's when compassion flowers. So what if it's not either or, it's both and? Yes, you're nobody special, you're nobody separate, but yet you are everybody, and they coexist in a synthesis of being human and being divine. So we're divinely human, and then we're humanly divine. You get both and right there in that matrix. So what would life be like if you weren't living your dream, but if you were living God's dream of the life that you've been given? You'd be rendering service, wouldn't you? You'd be offering the gifts that you have. So this Sunday, I'm going to explore the idea of what is our original talent. And then next week, I'm going to explore how can we give those gifts in the world. It was Emerson that said, and I brought out my old Emerson book. And this is what's left of it. This is a threadbare piece of a chapter here on self-reliance. But Emerson said, everyone has a gift, and the talent is the call. So then it would behoove us to explore what is that talent that our soul came with, this eternal soul that was here before you incarnated, and it came in with a soul contract to be in service to this planet and weave your threads of whatever as a being, not as a doing. And then when you can be like that original wisdom, and I was telling Gigi, it reminds me of you, Raul, that the indigenous people were just like you. They worked with the gestalt. They were there. If my neighbor doesn't have something, it's as if I don't have something. So you work with one another in this shared experience of the one life. There's the one story, not my story. So let me give you a little taste of Mark as he launches me into this inquiry, which is where I love to go. He said, the aliveness we're born with can't and should not be suppressed. He says, whenever we encounter unmitigated aliveness, whether it's in the flower, whether it's in the bird and its song, whether it's in a river or a fast-moving stream, Jody loves those, or whether it's in a person, he says, we're awakening to where it lives in us. If you see it out there, it's because it's in here and you're seeing yourself mirrored. So if you see the aliveness everywhere, it's the aliveness that sees the aliveness. If you see love everywhere in the world, it's because the love in you sees the love. Now, if you see boredom out there, it's because the bored part of you is seeing the bored. So it's all a reflection. Life is a beautiful reflection of our own consciousness. And there's a saying, you don't see what is, you see who you are. So he's saying, when this aliveness awakens within you, don't suppress it. He says, for the unfiltered light and pulse of beingness through which we're brought alive and kept alive and made tender, that is your original talent, is that aliveness. So if you do anything while you're here on this planet, seek to discover what is your capacity to be alive, to be joy-filled, to go rushing to your zafu. You know, when you meditate, it shouldn't be a task that you have to go do this discipline. It should be a joy. You go running to your zafu because you're meeting your beloved when you sit down. Same thing with your art. I had my first lover was an artist, and he was a troubled artist, and he would have that blank canvas syndrome. And I say, don't think too much about it. Get playful. Get those colors out, throw something on. And once he would get out of the seriosity of his art, well, then the art created itself. Now, what if that could be true for life? That we're not the doer, we're the instrument through which this creative something flows. And when you find the aliveness out there, it's the aliveness in here that's finding that. A gardener knows what I'm talking about. So he goes on to talk about this original talent. And, oh, Jody, you'll appreciate this. He went to a concert. I think it was Aerosmith. And he said, I'm backstage with this Aerosmith concert, and All of a sudden, I'm feeling the aliveness of the audience with everybody's hands moving, and they're all singing the song Dream, Dream, Dream. And it says there wasn't 1,000, 2,000 people. There was one people and one voice coming together in the aliveness of that moment. Could we experience that field of resonance by coming here on Sunday and ringing the bell and getting out of my story into our story and into the story? Could we enter into that synthesis of both and that my little friend reminded me back there? It's both and. It's painful and it's delightful. It's dark and it's light. It's, okay, dream on, dream on, dream on was the song that Aerosmith was singing. Regardless of the shape that the dream takes, no matter how different it might unfold from whence we dreamt it, we're asked to put down our judgments and our fears and our worries till we sway together through the burdens of our time, and God knows we live in troubled times. We're asked to stay authentic and be who we are, not who we ain't, because if you is who you ain't who you is. That's Bernie Siegel I'm quoting. He says, we're asked to stay authentic and to keep dreaming until our heart comes alive, and to stay possible and awake till your aliveness will spark those around you. Once you find that enthusiasm, which means entheos, to be filled with God, that enthusiasm is contagious. When Adam comes over and he's all excited, I get excited. So what if this is a contagioning factor, this aliveness? And dream on till the honey that sleeps in the rock of our stubbornness makes its sweetness known. He was quoting Psalm 81 and said, could we break open the rock and find the sweetness of life even in the stone? So could we break our life open, the crust, the identity, all the concepts and conclusions that we have? And when that all breaks apart, there's something that is fresh and alive. I was sharing with the group this morning, my beloved Virginia Burroughs is taking our Ajashanti class, and one little sentence became this epiphany for her when Ajashanti said, what you feel, God feels. And she said, in that holy instant, I thought, my God, the universe is experiencing itself through my feelings. And when she went to get her booster shot, and she's sitting in a room of, it was packed with people with masks on, and she said, I saw that they were all, what they were feeling, God was feeling. So one little idea began to flower in the field of her awareness. We're so much bigger than what we experience. So could the universe have its dream through you and me? What would that dream be like? It's something to do with your soul. Your soul is your eternal nature. It's the part of you that was never born and never dies, even though this physical life has an expiration date. But there's something that is so grace-filled that doesn't. Could we get curious about who I am? You know, that's called Vaichara with Ramana Maharshi. One simple question is the spiritual practice. And the question is, who am I? And by asking the question, it's not to come up with an answer, is to realize that the I that I am is not the finite self. Who am I is the I am that Moses discovered on the mountain. When God said, who speaketh? He said, I am that I am. So what if there is only this I am in multiplicity, and we are that? It's like the little wave on the ocean finally recognizing that it's the ocean. Holy cow. Then this perception of being separate just kind of falls away. It dissolves. There's a Sharon Ledford painting over the walkway, and it just says dissolve. Spirit, use me. Could we be willing to dissolve into this nothingness to experience the wisdom, the original wisdom of that nothingness, and then ultimately come back into the finite form, Ashley, and realize I'm everything. I'm everything and I'm nothing. Boy, is that too big an order to play with? We're just playing, Jackie. So she had a little dog and her little dog disappeared in the night. But we know that that little dog, there are no accidents, and it went wherever it went. And it found its home somewhere else. Well, no, in whatever way that was. And the beautiful thing is when you create a space, then something will come into that space. It was interesting when, if you don't have a vision for your life, the world will try to give you their vision. And that's just the way it is. I was kind of floundering, taking spiritual classes in my 30s, and my beloved husband was going back and getting his master's in education. And so he decided, because I was just taking silly classes at a center in Atlanta, that I should go back and get my master's in education. There's a program. We could both be school teachers. This was his vision. He wanted to be a school teacher so we could have our summers off and we could travel. And so I acquiesced. And by the time I got my certification to teach and I was in the classroom, student teaching, The voice of my soul said, this will kill you. And I went home after my first day of student teaching and I said, I'm dropping out. Oh, he was just furious that I would take his dream and throw the dream that he had for us as two school teachers in the world. And he says, but whatever you do, don't become a minister. I had never even considered that idea. I was taking classes in that silly organization, and before you know it, and I didn't choose the dream of minister, it chose me. If you've ever seen 42nd Street, Ruby Keeler's in the chorus line, she's dancing, and the star of the musical, she breaks her leg. And the director of the musical says to Ruby Keeler, listen, kid, she broke her leg, she can't go out, but you're going to have to go out there, and we're all dependent on you. So you're going to go out a nobody, and you're going to come back a star. So I've often felt that I've suffered from the Ruby Keeler syndrome. They just pull me out of the chorus line, they shove me in there, and so somebody else's dream gets to unfold. So what if we can get playful with this dream thing? When God is having a dream of its creation, and that universal presence moves you in a different direction, it takes you from California to Alabama, well then what are you going to do with that? You weren't meant to stay in California. You know, you weren't meant to stay in Mississippi. You came all the way here. I was supposed to go to Asheville, North Carolina, but they couldn't have one of me there, so I guess the universe put me in Alabama. So what if the universe has a way of taking us, if we are surrendered and allowing, and will give us this amazing place to play? And that's what I'm going to play with this Sunday morning. This is for my beloved daughter Ashley over there, who speaks her truth, even though it annoys people. And I found myself reading Emerson's essay on self-reliance, which is the Declaration of Independence for the soul. He says, absolve you to yourself. He says, beware when the universe unleashes an original thinker. He says, speak your truth, not somebody else's truth. You know, it's all about declaring who you are. He says that society everywhere is in conspiracy against the manhood of every one of its members. They don't want you to be an authentic soul. They want you to conform. And he says this, whoso would be an individual must be a nonconformist. And nothing at last is sacred but the integrity of your own mind, of your own heart, of your own truth. And you have to find that. Not somebody else's truth, not your parents' truth, not society's truth, not the church's truth, your truth. Absolve you to yourself, and you shall have the suffrage of the world. Boy, can you imagine how many people he pissed off by saying this kind of stuff? He says, what do I have to do with the sacredness of tradition if I live holy from within? He says, my friend suggested, but these impulses may be from below and not from above. We know who they're speaking about. And I replied to them, well, they do not seem to me to be such. But if you want to call me the devil's child, well, then I will live from the devil. I'm going to be true to who I am. He says, no law can be sacred to me but the law of my own true nature. And good and bad are but names very readily transferable to that or to this. But the only right is what is after my constitution, and the only wrong is that which is not true to who I am in my heart. So could we be true to ourselves? Could we give ourselves permission to speak our truth courageously and strongly in a world that would have us conform and agree with them? He says, I do not wish to expiate, but I wish to live. And my life is not an apology, but it is a life. And it is for itself and not for a spectacle. So I much prefer that I should be of a lower strain so that it be genuine and so that it be equal, rather than it should be glittering and unsteady. I don't want all the pomp and circumstance and the frill. I just want to be an authentic person. So I'm going to the very end of this essay where he says, my inner giant goes with me wherever I go. He's speaking about the divine presence within him, the Orphic voice within, that stream whose source is hidden, from which I draw from. He said, it goes with me everywhere. So he's pointing to something for you and I to intuit. He said, insist on yourself and never imitate. Find that original talent of your being, that original gift that you came here for, that the world might have been critical of. Oh, you're too truthful, or you're too honest, or you're too this, or you're too that. You're too free-spirited. And be that, he's saying. So he says, your own gift you can present in every moment with the cumulative force of all of life's cultivation. But of the adopted talent of another, you have only an extemporaneous half possession. Don't try to be like somebody else. He says, that which each can do best, none but his maker can teach him. Put yourself in debt to the universe, not to the world. You are an expression of the ocean of love. Now, what would that look like in your life? You are the clarity of a consciousness that isn't bound by concepts and conclusions. You are an awake awareness that is free of all beliefs. That's what we're playing with in the Ajahshanti class. He says, I can't afford to believe my own thoughts. Well, then you get to look at thoughts. And is this true? Is this really true? And if it isn't true, why go down that path? You know, we do love to suffer. And sometimes when we, you know, my beloved husband, he's trying to save the trees. And he's even spoken to Francis Ackridge. He's spoken to the city arborist. And I gave him this little pearl from Ernest Holmes to be for something and against nothing. And so we've put a fund aside where he is going to play for every new tree that's being planted in the city of Huntsville, especially in Five Points where he wants more trees. But then a very busybody neighbor will send him photographs. Four huge trees are taken down on Franklin, and there's a before and an after picture. Another two huge trees were removed. They weren't even sick on Pratt Avenue. And so then Trey goes into this, well, why am I paying $200 a tree after they've just removed six trees that were perfectly healthy? So then he gets into this mental dialogue with himself, and I said, honey, just breathe. Just breathe. You're creating a fund. You're taking a step. Trees are being planted and will be planted. You can't fight every battle against something, but you can try to raise consciousness around something that you really believe in. Absolve you to yourself. So here's Emerson saying, your own gift you can present in every moment with a cumulative force of all of life's cultivation, but of adopted travel talents you cannot. That which each can do best, none but his maker can teach him. He says, do you think somebody could have taught a Shakespeare how to do Shakespeare? Shakespeare will never be made by the study of Shakespeare. He says, dwell up there in the simple and noble regions of thy own truth. Dwell in this atmosphere of what is true for you, what is true for your heart, and obey your heart, and then thou shalt reproduce a world that will thrive again. To find out what is true for you in your heart, that is genius. And he goes on to say, lastly, okay, here it is, lastly. They measure their esteem of each other by what each other has and not by what each other is. But a cultivated individual becomes ashamed of his properties, ashamed of all that he has, out of a new respect for who he is being. Emerson says, be and not seem. He says, let us acquiesce, let us surrender, let us get our bloated nothingness out of the way, and when we do, we connect with the divine circuits. So it's all about being an expression of that so that it might unfold in the world. And when you let that be your priority, it ripples out in the world. He goes on to say, it is only as a man puts off from himself all external support and stands alone that he can see himself strong and prevailing. He who knows the power is in his soul, that he is a weak only because he has looked for good outside of himself and elsewhere, and so perceiving, throws himself unhesitatingly on his own thoughts, instantly then rights himself, stands in an erect posture, commands his limbs, works miracles, just as a man who stands on his feet is stronger than a man who stands on his head. We are all chancellors of God. So stand on the truth that resonates with you, and then speak it. Not hesitatingly, but clearly, even if the world can't comprehend it. Because the world will ask you to conform, and they won't ask you to be an original thinker. So could we play with that idea, that original talent that we were born with, that wants to flower? And could we give our children permission to do that? You know, I remember I was in California in Big Sur, and there was this very wealthy he was an attorney and she was a doctor, and they had one little child. And they lived in a mansion. And this little boy, they were putting in all these special classes and education and teaching him this and that. And I had the chutzpah to say, well, have you concern about his soul? How it might want to express, not the way you want to mold him, but what he might. And I thought she thought I was crazy. But what if we are here to foster that invisible something that we all have, first within ourselves and then within each other? And we can't know what it's going to look like. It's when flowering of compassion should arise within you. Who would have thought it would be toward the trees, you know? Or in Jean Ann's case, for the butterflies, you know? For my area of compassion, it would be for the liberation of your soul. And in order to serve the liberation of your soul, I have to serve the liberation of the soul that I've been given, because there isn't a separate soul here and a separate soul there. And then we get into this place where we lose control, and we're not in control at all. And we lose the dream that someone else had for you. I was supposed to be a school teacher. My mom wanted me to be a doctor. My dad wanted to be an attorney. Nobody wanted me to be sitting in a chair up here, ringing a bell, and talking about being nobody and everybody. So what if the world has a vision for you that's greater than the vision you have for yourself? Lastly, I found this morning in my office on the back of a book. You never know where you're going to find the voice of God speaking. This is Alan Cohen. And he says, the peace that you seek is found within yourself. He says, you are ready to accept the treasure of your heart's quest. When you are ready to accept the treasure of your heart's quest. He says, there is no power in the universe that can stand between you and your dream. Huh. What if it's a sacred dream? It's the dream that the universe is having of itself as you. No one can stand in that way. The time has come for you to live your destiny from which you were born. So go forth and claim your heart's desire, and there you will find your dream come true. To find your heart's desire. Remember at the end of The Wizard of Oz, when Glenda said, what did you learn, Dorothy? After all your trials and chasing after the broomstick and whistling, what did you learn? And Dorothy said, well, I learned to never look any further than my own backyard. Because if what I dreamed about wasn't there, well, then I never really lost it to begin with. In other words, the dream was there all along, and I was looking for the goldfinch to fulfill my dream, or the career to fulfill my dream, or the R&PM, the right and perfect mate to fulfill my dream. And you know what? None of that outer stuff really can. They can complement it. You know, someone was talking about my marriage to Trey and these beautiful 45 years we've had together. And yet what made Trey and I so really healthy as a couple was because he was so fiercely independent as a solitary individual, and I was equally as independent. We didn't need someone to make us complete. Rather, we reflected back that liberation and that wholeness with one another, and it's been a flowering. He supports my growth and unfoldment, and I support his growth and unfoldment. We co-create, but it's a both and again. It's not an either or. I don't conform to his vision, and nor does he conform to mine. So could we live in a world that fosters that kind of liberation into talent, into dreams? So Mark Nepo, in this lovely little chapter, he asked the question, put your dream before you and see it as a reflection of your soul. So I'm going to ask my friend Raoul to go back to that magic bell. It's called the mindfulness bell for a reason, because the intention behind the bell is once you ring the bell, it places your attention on a sound which ultimately takes you into stillness. And the more we can train our attention, our mind, to go from the nattering nabobs of negativity in the mind and take refuge in that stillness that's always available, then we learn to listen deeply to a language of the soul. And each one of us gets to go there on our own. I will guide you there. And then it's our opportunity, challenge, and responsibility to deeply listen. Not for ideas, but for a felt awareness. So when you're ready, my beloved, you can take us into the bell. Allow the bell to take you into that deep place. A place that is always there. And notice out of the silence comes sound. And out of the sound, we return to silence. Krishnamurti speaks about meditation as a practice of observing thought from a place of stillness. And when you realize that thought arises, but we are this observer in this silent refuge, witnessing thought like clouds in the sky, we can follow the clouds and make up stories. Or we can be that spacious sky in which the thoughts arise. So I invite you to entertain the idea of the dream of your life. And if you're like me, you see you had many dreams in this long-lived life. But now I invite you to come to the end of seeking and invite God's idea for your life to begin to flower within that field of awareness. So I'm not engaging thought, but I'm inviting your heart's desire to court the question, what is life's dream for me? What is my original talent that brings me alive, that I carry into that dream? And just feel into it. You don't have to be thinking. There's no finite answer. There's a felt awareness that comes from within the heart of the One. In the dream, I hear this question, how freely am I able to receive and to give love in this dance called life? What is my capacity for compassion? First with self and with other? And where is compassion for the suffering on the planet? Just observe. How am I rendering service to the One? Without thinking, can I smile at a stranger and know that I'm transmitting the deepest acceptance? I don't have to fix somebody's life. I can know that their life is filled with grace and that the challenges they have is the very thing that their soul requires for its growth and unfoldment. And so perhaps we serve by holding others in the high watch, seeing the grace, seeing the good, seeing the God, even in the seeming challenges that we encounter along the path. And so we're left with this abiding stillness, all because the bell of mindfulness is rung. And throughout our day, without the help of the bell, we can just stop and we can take 3 deep breaths. And in our memory, we can remember the bell that took us home, a place that has never left us and that waits for our return. My beloved Joanne sits outside and listens to the cicadas. And they take her into a trance-like state. And so what if the wind could teach us its lessons as we lowly listen? And the cicadas and the birds could sing a song so that we might hear the song of the universe and deeply hear it, not with a preference that it be one way or another, but that in its own sacred isness, its suchness, it is touching something so deeply resonant that we feel this interconnectedness, this synthesis with all life. It is not me versus you. It is both and. And so we rest in the both and today. We are both human and we're divine. We are both empty of self. And sometimes we're full of ourselves, like my little pug. But at the heart of it all, we are the one life unveiling itself in this dream that we share. And then Don Miguel Ruiz would ask the question, are you in my dream or am I in yours? And then something within laughs because the mind wants to form an answer and there is no answer. Life is but a dream. And so we row our boat gently, merrily, down our stream, seeing the dream with softer eyes. And when we change the way we look at the dream actually changes and can be so fascinating. So I invite you to rest in that not knowing and feel comfortable there. We're not here to find answers. We're here to stay teachable. to grow and evolve so that our planet might grow and evolve. It's so simple and yet so profound. So I invite you, at the end of my yoga classes, I would always end with the heart salutation, because it's a declaration of a commitment that you make to the yoking of self to self, yoking of your individualized self to the one self, the one presence, the one life, the one heart. And so I invite you to place your hands on your heart, symbolically, and join with me by saying, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of the self.
You are the deepest aspect of the self.
The beloved presence in me bows to the beloved presence in you. In this spaciousness we are one.
In this spaciousness we are one.
And the dream unfolds.
And the dream unfolds.
With grace and ease.
With grace and ease.
And we stand in awe.
And in awe.
As we witness her beauty.
As we witness her beauty.
Just as I witnessed the beautiful gardenia yesterday, I invite you to open your eyes and to see life flowering within your heart, within your mind, within the body of your experience. And take the next step, dancing with both hands all the way. Thank you for sending in your tithes out there. Happy Labor Day, and we'll see you next week.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.